Hi, folks. This is Warren Hunt with another episode of the Top Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 73. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Chime in with comments and such on the blog and show notes. And follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts. Well, you'll get emails notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, so this week we have another mixed bag of listener feedback and questions and other things that I'm just thinking about. So, also, whenever you hear like the change in audio quality or background noise and whatnot, I'm probably going to be doing this in different segments because, I'm starting to record things and they just kind of hit me, all right? So, anyway, what I want to start off with is on kind of a somber note. I woke up this morning, I was eating breakfast and saw that Jim Marshall passed away today. And Jim Marshall is the, the namesake, the founder of Marshall Amplification, established in 1962. Basically, built the first offset Marshall on the platform of what Leo Fender created with the 59 Bassman. He took that and made it into a 100-watt amp and in a piggyback type of formation where the head sits on top of, the amplifier head sits on top of a 412 or an 812 cabinet, speaker cabinet. And because it was 100 watts and the circuitry was so clean and point to point and not on a PC board, not anything to add capacitance or resistance or anything like that, the amps were, they gained a reputation as being some of the loudest amps in the world. And another part of it is that they were made in England, so their power rating is different. And whenever the British amp would arrive in the States and our power was a little bit hotter than theirs, the power rating of 100 watts might have been like 108 or 110 or something like that. It'd be a lot, be enough louder, but or enough more power, so that may have played into it too. But it was a 100 watt amp, and they're just stinking loud. And like I have a JCM 800, and it just gets super loud. I've only dimed it one time. It was a lot of fun, but it was more than what was needed. Honestly, I've heard of people, that they won't play their Marshall any other way, and I don't know how they can hear anything now. But anyway, I want to pay respect to Jim Marshall and the Marshall family, and just throw that out there. Just have a little moment of silence for Jim Marshall. All right. Well, next I want to talk about, not to start the whole thing off on a downer, but I have an apology to make. There have been, when I first started getting listener feedback, questions on email and stuff, I would receive them in my inbox, and I was going to set up a smart folder so that whenever something came in with from that form on the website or a direct email, then it would go into like a listener feedback folder in my email application. Well, I did that a bit, and then I kind of got away from it and just kept everything in that inbox and would just tackle them as they came in, and or what I could, the low-hanging fruit, the stuff I could knock out really quick or really easy, or I had a whole lot of, already had the knowledge of. And so I went that route and forgot that I was putting things, and originally had put things in that other folder. Therefore, there are emails I found in that folder that are way old. And I sincerely apologize to those of you who have emailed me questions and have gotten into that folder, and it's kind of been a purgatory of your question, and it's been, you know, that hasn't been answered. And I'm sure you're going, hey man, why are you answering this guy's question? All these other, I asked a question a long, long time ago, how big is your backlog? Well, I do have a backlog of recent questions too, but, you know, I've noticed some analytics data showing that I may be losing some people since specifically because of that, and I sincerely apologize. My level of service, I wanted it to be much higher than that, and much better response times than have taken place here. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through, and next several episodes, I really want to cover these questions, listener feedback, and knock that stuff out, right? Also, I want to have more episodes per month and per week, consequently, to do so. Also, I noticed that when I look around on the internet and iTunes and stuff, there's really only a handful of guitar podcasts, and I think a void needs to be filled, and I want to do it. So, if you guys want to keep me on my toes or just add to the backlog of questions, listener feedback that I need to address, man, fire your emails at me. I want to address them, and I know what really would help me get these questions answered a lot quicker and get to the point, because I do have a lot coming in, and what would help is, honestly, if you start your email with a question and then give the answer, I mean, give the background about it, and say, hey, Lauren, I got a question about why my tone knobs really sound like crap. Why do they sound like crap? They don't seem to have any use, you know. I mean, just for example, I'm going to cover a question on tone knobs here today, but and his question was posed very, very well. But I'm just, you know, since it's on the top of my head, that's the example I'm going to use. So it's like, hey, Lauren, my tone knobs don't seem to be useful. I turn them up all the time and never turn them down. I don't find any use out of them. And so what do you think of that? And then give all the background on it and say, well, this guitar, sometimes it does sound good. I've seen people change, you know, or whatever. Then you give your background. Then you can give you several paragraphs of background on it, because, and the thing is that other people may be asking the same question, and so if you can summarize your question in the very beginning and then give the background, you can give me your novel afterwards, that'd be awesome. And I'm not throwing that out there being mean or anything like that, because the majority of you haven't done that. The majority of you have not given me a novel, and then somewhere tucked in the novel is the question. Most of you do either ask the question right at the beginning and then give me the background, or you give me a novel and then at the end of it you give me the question. I guess it'd make it easier on me to address them if it's the question right off the top, and then I can get the background and dig deeper and be able to follow up with that. So that would be a tremendous help. Again, I apologize for not addressing some of the older emails. And that's one of the things I really, really want to focus on is knocking that stuff out. So then, with that, move on to the next topic, which is a question posed by a listener, and I don't remember his name, because I'm doing this one in my car. As obviously, you can hear the background noise and everything. But it's a really good question about tone and tone knobs, and you know, like differences, and never really saw much of a difference, and honestly, It's a good question. For the most part, most of my guitar playing life, I would always just be sure that the tone knobs were turned all the way up, because they seemed pretty useless to me. And in the 80s, you had your Super Strats, and a lot of them didn't have any tone knobs at all, because, you know, just didn't seem to find them as useful at all. Now, part of what plays into that is the style and tone of the music that we were playing in the 80s, or late 70s, early 80s. Another thing that plays into it is a lot of potentiometers, or the pots, that are used on a lot of guitars are junk. And they don't really do anything. They're just kind of there. All they do is it's either all the way up, or you start turning it and it just cuts off really quick. It's a drastic change, and you don't have that nice gradual taper down to rolling off the highs all the way down to, you know, more of a bassy tone. So, but, you know, older guitars will, you know, guitars in the 70s, they should have, and on back, and higher end guitars like your custom made guitars or your boutique, so to speak, guitars like Don Grosch or Nash guitars, or I think Danocaster, and did I say Don Grosch? Paul Reed Smith. Paul Reed Smith has a different approach to tone knobs, and I'll address that in a minute. But a lot of guitars I'll get, if I open up the back of it or look at the control panel on the inside and see that they're crappy knobs, I'll change them out for CTS 250K knobs on your single coil Stratocaster, Telecaster type guitars, and 500K on your humbucking guitars like your Les Pauls and Super Strats and so on and so forth. So, and of course, getting the right capacitor on there on your tone knob will change the taper and how much is getting through in the or how much you're rolling off your treble on your tone knob. So most guitars that you're going to come across, basically when you have the tone all the way up, it is just passing by that tone knob. Okay, it's like the tone knob isn't even there, almost. But then when you roll it off, if it's a good tone potentiometer and has the right capacitor on it and everything, what it's going to do is roll off the highs and add more bass. Not really add the bass, it just rolls off the highs so that all you're really left with is the bass. And consequently, the effect that you experience is more bass because there's less highs or no highs. Now then, Paul Reed Smith, instead of having a knob that's like that, they have this notched knob that has different capacitors set on it, so that you have these different sweet spots. So it's completely different. It's like I don't know if any of you ever played like a Bad Cat or something like that, or maybe like a high low switch on a pedal or an amp. It's like several different high low switches, so you can have. You can have it on like zero, and there's no effect of the knob. You put it on one, and it pulls it down a little bit, or just changes things up a bit more. So then, which leads me to when I was talking about my G&L Skyhawk, and I was going, this is really, really weird how the tone knobs work, because the first knob is a volume, the second knob is a tone, and the third knob is a tone. And instead of, you know, typically on a Strat that the middle knob would be the neck pickup and the back knob would be the third knob would be the middle pickup, the two tone knobs control all three pickups and all five positions on the pickup selector. And that second knob is the first tone knob, actually rolls off highs, but then at some point around 6, 7, or 8 it becomes a mid boost and almost acts like a wah. So it's just a little bit different, not like a drastic wah, like, you know, a Hendrix wah or a Jerry Cantrell wah or anything like that, or a Bad Horsey, but it, you could kind of get that effect just a little bit. And there's a wreck up ahead. Road dangers. The dangers of mobile podcasting, folks. Anyway, I'm past it. We're safe. Everything's cool. Then the third knob, the second tone knob, is a bass roll off. So, you know, you can really, I think it's a better approach than what Leo Fender did originally with Stratocasters and Telecasters and so on, because you have that better control. And if you want a mid boost, because guitars basically live in that, their tone lives in that mid-range in a band setting. So, I mean, like, you know, the bass guitar obviously holds down the bottom end. The vocals hold a more top end and a bit of mid-range. And the keyboard's all over the place. But the guitar really punches through with mid-range. And so if you want more of that for, say, a lead, then you can roll that down to boost that mid-range. But my experience playing my G&L Skyhawk has been that I'm using the bridge pickup going basically directly into, well, I'm not, you know, most of the time I'm not even using a distortion pedal going into that GA40, my Gibson GA40, and I'm getting a lot of distortion, almost more distortion than I did with my Les Paul. So I have to roll off my volume knob
to clean it up if I want to get clean.
And I've had to roll it back to about 3 or 4 to get it cleaned up. Now then, if it's full volume and I want it to be dirty, then I've been rolling that first tone knob down to about 2 or so and getting some really nice single coil, but fat single coil tone. And I've been really, really pleased with that. Another note on tone is that something that if you're familiar with Eric Clapton, if you listen to like Cream, early Cream music or albums, and you'll hear his lead tone is really kind of this singing overdriven tone. It's really thick and nice and fuzzy and just awesome. They coined it the woman tone. And basically what he does is when he'd go into a lead, he'd go into he'd use the neck pickup on his Gibson ES-335, which is a humbucking guitar, and then roll his volume, his tone all the way down. So he's taking like a bass pickup, or the rhythm / bass type pickup on his guitar, and rolling off all the highs too. So it's just really warm and singing and just awesome. So try that sometime when you're tooling around with your guitar, and if you know any, you know, Clapton licks or whatever. It doesn't even have to be Clapton stuff. You'll start hearing, you know, you just hold that A note on the G string, 14th fret, and you know, with a good amount of distortion, just a smidge of reverb in that neck position, and the tone all the way down. Just hold that note and give it a little vibrato, and you know what I'm talking about. And I think your ear and your heart will take you someplace that you've never been before. I know that's ridiculous, but really, play some cool blues right there, or even get into some, you know, if you're Yngwie guy or whatever, or Shredder. I think it'll open up a new world if you haven't already tried that. So give that a shot. And a nice segue from that tone question and tone knob question in ES-335 is to where I've been covering the five core guitars that that if you had the budget to have, to get. And leads us to the hollow body, semi-hollow body electric guitar that could be coined a jazz box or semi-hollow body or hollow body guitar. And probably the king of those guitars is the Gibson ES-335, played by the aforementioned Eric Clapton back in the Cream days. He also played an SG. And then of course, in the 70s, he switched to the Stratocaster. The B.B. King is also known as playing the ES-335. His Lucille guitar is 335. A lot of guys are playing 335s these days. And they're really awesome guitars. You get a nice woody tone, but a nice fat tone, too, because of the humbuckers. And then, nice thing about the 335 or the, there are tons of different jazz box or semi-hollow bodies or hollow bodies. Ted Nugent played a hollow body too, but I think it was truly hollow body, and I mean that thing would feedback, and he had like X's marked all over his stage, so he knew where he could set the thing just to go crazy with feedback and sustain and noise and racket and stuff. But anyway, with I'm not going to cover this extensively because I don't use one, I don't play one, I don't play jazz, and so I'm just going to talk about it kind of briefly here. But that you can play jazz on it, you can play blues, you can play rock on a semi hollow body or hollow body. Also, you can play rockabilly. Can play a lot of guys will play rockabilly on. A lot of the rockabilly guys will play the semi-hollow bodies. The old-time country, like the Texas swing guys, they'll use hollow bodies too. So if you look at guys like Brian Setzer, his Gretsch is obviously a semi-hollow body electric guitar. And so, your rockabilly and Texas swing guys follow suit there. So they're very versatile guitars as well. The one place I wouldn't see a semi-hollow body is in your kind of hair metal, shredder, or, speed metal, death metal type of genre. It's like one place you probably won't see a semi-hollow body played much at all, if ever. And so, If you are into, if you're a Brian Setzer guy, you probably already know this. Or if you're a rockabilly guy, you probably already know this. But, that is the guitar for you, really. I mean, if I were a rockabilly guy or jazz or anything like that, and I think a lot of the jazz guys cross over into rockabilly and vice versa. But, that would be the guitar. It wouldn't be a Les Paul or a Strat or anything like that. I'd be using a semi-hollow body, whether it's a Gretsch, any one of the great Gretsch guitars, or ES-335 type. And then just depending on how much open sound, open tone you want, or internal resonance or feedback. Resisting elements in the guitar. So if it's a semi-hollow body, it means that there's a solid block of wood right down the middle of the body, so that it follows the neck all the way down to the back of the body, so that it or the butt of the body, basically. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology there, but that helps it so that there's a it doesn't eliminate the feedback factor, but it helps. Now, if there's no solid block in there, there's nothing helping you. That top and back is just going to vibrate to no end at the right setting, and it can be very, very challenging on stage. especially if you use wedges for monitors instead of in-ear monitors. So it can get, and if you have your amp on stage, you have your amp on stage and wedges, it can be a nightmare. But if you have your amps off stage or not pointed at your guitar and you don't use wedges, you use in-ear monitors. Wow, two people just pulled right out in front of me on a red. That was really crazy. That was insane. You know when that happens? I drive a jalopy. I really, and sometimes people do that, and they drive these nice cars, and I'm driving this piece of crap. I really feel like just ramming them. You know, just like, your fault, crunch. Sorry about your luck. Oh well. But then again, I hate all the paperwork. I've never had a wreck, and I don't want to deal with all the paperwork and all that crap. So, I'm probably going to try not to do that. But in this fantasy world of my mind of, you know, Mad Max and crazy driving and stuff and road rage, the dangers of mobile podcasting, I fantasize about doing that, just ramming cars. But anyway, that is the semi-hollow-body, hollow-body electric guitar, which, as I said, don't have a lot of experience with. I've played a few. They're really cool, but they don't fit the style of guitar that I typically play. I'm very happy with my with a Les Paul or a SG style or a now finally I have a Stratocaster that I like, and I mean, I love the feel of them and everything, the way they sit on your body and everything. It's just the tone hasn't been right. Well, with this G&L, the tone's right. And I've always been happy with a Telecaster. So, leaves one guitar for the next episode, unless I cover it later here. When I do the second part of this installment, which will probably, may not be a mobile podcast. It may be just me at home in the home studio, so. Which is my couch. It's nothing fancy, folks. Nothing fancy at all. So anyway, I'll be back. All right, so last night, I got to experience and hear what it sounds like when a power tube arcs or blows up or just kind of gets completely fried in an amp. And potentially what it sounds like whenever, the output transformer may have gone too, but best way I can describe it is, imagine the chassis of your amp being strapped in the electric chair and, of course, juicing it up and frying your amp, yet at the same time, your amp being run through either a garbage disposal or a paper shredder, or maybe better yet, one of those wood shredders. Whenever they cut down trees and they take the wood, the limbs that would be like kindling if you're building a fire, that they run those through in chipper shredder type of a thing. All that combined into one, and that's pretty much what it sounds like. And, pretty much sounds like an amp dying, a horrible, horrible death. So, what caused this? Well, first let me describe the kind of amp and everything that this is. Its wiring is a lot like my GA40 or my Getchell Chicago Deluxe, where it has, it's a push-pull system with basically AB circuitry, 6V6 power tubes, and very small, an average sized power transformer and a fairly small output transformer. Anyway, what caused this was the power tubes were not matched. One was much weaker than the other. So then when this happens, the more powerful tube begins to draw more power than the weaker tube, to the point where the weaker tube can't keep up and it's not pulling any power, and then the stronger tube is getting like double the amount of power that it's coming through. I won't tell you, I don't know what, you know, what the exact calculation is or the exact figure, how much power was going through that particular tube to make it completely fry, but that's what caused. So when that tube is pulling that much power, the more powerful tube dies, basically. It arcs, it glows blue around it, outside, it's like outside, the blue is glowing outside of its glass. It's really a crazy thing to see. And then, I mean, you may see these on older tubes sometimes where they'll start to glow outside, but it's okay, I guess. And I've seen plenty of amps run for long periods of time like that, and both of them are blowing glowing blue like that. I'm sorry, I cannot speak this morning. So the funny thing is the stronger tube sacrifices itself for the weaker tube. It's kind of funny that I bring that up. It's Good Friday. So anyway, the stronger tube dies and the weaker tube lives. But in this case, it may very well be, and I'll follow up with this, that the output transformer was super hot after this. I mean, probably about 10, 15 minutes, maybe even a half hour after the event, we pulled the chassis out of the box, and the output transformer was still really, really warm. So it may have fried too, but you know, we don't know. I don't know at this point. So those are some of the dangers. It could have blown the speaker too, but the speaker's probably okay for what we were hearing. But you know, that's one of the big reasons why you want to be sure that your tubes are matched very closely, if not dead on. And I would imagine that that this would only occur if there was a drastic difference between the two. But anyway, it was kind of an interesting experience last night when it began happening. It came on real slow, but then within 30 seconds, it was full bore frying, and that stronger power tube was toast, literally. So that was that. I thought I'd share that with y'all. Now then, I want to wrap up the five core guitars that a guitar freak should have, and it's basically, it's the acoustic guitar. And for that matter, I don't care if you choose to go with the Telecaster, a Stratocaster, or you know, those styles, or a semi hollow body, or a Les Paul, or a Super Strat, or what you wind up deciding to go with. I think every guitar player should have two guitars at bare minimum, an electric guitar and an acoustic guitar. And so that, you know, you have your plug and play and rock out loud at, you know, at the club or wherever, or in the garage or the basement or whatever. And then you have your campfire guitar or something that really travels well on vacation. You're not going to make a bunch of racket, but you can still keep your chops up. And honestly, I'm not sure. I don't care if you go with a Dreadnought or auditorium or concert style or like a 12 fret or anything like that. It doesn't really matter to me. Just that you have a decent acoustic guitar. And you don't have to spend an arm and a leg on an acoustic guitar to get a decent one, especially if it's going to be one of those travel acoustic, you know, I mean, you can get something used at a guitar shop for you know, $200, you could find a decent guitar, and let your ear be the guide, of course. You know, if it's a feel right, does it fit right, does it sound right? And I mean, of course, then there are those of us who will spend, you know, upwards of $1,000, $2,000 on an acoustic guitar. And yes, my tailor does go to the campfire with me and on vacation with me. So, but I'm very careful. I take pretty good care of my stuff, and I'm sure to not let it wind up going in the fire, of course. So, then again, if you have a semi-hollow body, as I mentioned earlier in this episode, it can play a dual role as one you plug into your amp and get loud and rock out or get all honky-tonky and all that crazy stuff. Or you can, you know, sit in your hotel room or in your bedroom or whatever, or sit on your couch and strum out some tunes with it. It's still not quite, it has a lot of acoustic qualities because it's hollow or semi-hollow. But it's still not going to ring like a dreadnought or a 12 fret guitar or a, you know, anything like that. So if you really had to go with one and that was it, I mean, you'd have that kind of choice. But if you're at the campfire with your semi hollow body or hollow body, it's really not going to ring out enough to get songs going. So thought I would share that little bit of information. Something that's really important, if you wanted to get a higher, a better acoustic guitar, of course, the top of the line will have a solid spruce top or solid koa or mahogany or whatnot. It would have a solid top and a solid back and sides. My guitar has a laminated back and sides, but the top is solid, so at bare minimum the top should be solid. Okay, if you're wanting to, you know, make that next step up. But I've heard plenty of guitars with a laminated top, with a laminated everything, sound pretty good, and on a budget sounding pretty good and staying under $500, under $300, that's music to my ears. So I won't fault anybody for doing that, as long as they're pleased with the tone and the sound and the feel and everything about the guitar, and it's not, you know, making you late on your mortgage or your car payment or whatever. And of course, for that matter, I don't want to encourage people to go into debt or finance. Go into financing for musical instruments or anything like that. You know, get what you can afford, pay cash, don't finance. I strongly recommend not financing. Don't go into debt. Don't pay the interest. Don't do any of that stuff. Just buy the thing and have it, own it. These are tough times, and I know it's tough to come up with the cash to do it, but you know, it's tougher to add to that debt pile in the long run. And whether or not it's a high end or a used guitar store, you know, or cheapie, you'll appreciate it more when you pay for it with cash, and it's not haunting you with a bill every month from musician's friend or whatever. Nothing against musician's friend. I've bought plenty of stuff from them. They're great. Like Sam Ash and a lot of other online retailers. They're great. I just won't go into debt for it. So, there's my... I'll get off my soapbox in that regard. And I think that pretty much wraps it up for this week's episode of the Guitar Podcast.
Like what you heard. You dig the show, tell your friends, tell your buddies, all your friends at the guitar shop, or in your band, at your school.